So we will begin the meeting. President Unger is not present this evening, so bear with me. It's been a while since I've done this, but we're going to make it work. Mrs. Roger is clerk tonight. The board met in closed session and discussed two student discipline matters and some anticipated litigation and personnel matters, as well as a conference with our real property negotiators with regard to the Apple Beach property. We do have a couple of actions to take, and one is action on student stipulated student discipline agreement one. I would like a motion regarding that and supporting the action that was discussed in closed session. Thank you. A second?
I'll second.
Thank you. So we will, and it has to do with other means of correction. I am going to, just to explain to the public what we're doing here, after we go through this, you'll see a folder being passed back and forth, but it's because we all need to sign off on this. I will remind the board to please note that we need to sign in two places on each of these. I will ask the same thing with regard to the stipulated student discipline agreement two. Is there a motion? Oh, and I didn't actually take a vote. So we'll do a roll call vote. Ms. Frame?
Yes.
Dr. Eisendrath Rogers?
Yes.
I'm a yes. Mrs.
Yes.
Roger? Mr. Buckman?
Yes.
Ms. Dovler-Drew? Okay, thank you. Okay. And with regard to student two, Mrs. Roger, did you make a motion? Did anyone make?
No, but I will.
Thank you.
I'll move approval.
And a second, please. Okay, thank you. A motion by Mrs. Roger, a second by Ms. Dovler-Drew. Once again, Mr. Buckman?
Yes.
Ms. Dovler-Drew?
Yes.
Dr. Eisendrath Rogers?
Yes.
Ms. Frame?
Yes.
Ms. Roger?
Yes.
And I'm a yes. Okay, so we have those out of the way. We will move on. The first item is our is everyone in consensus on the order of business? Thank you. So we have a presentation on senior highlights from Morro Bay, San Luis Obispo, and Pacific Beach High Schools.
Good evening, board. This is Leslie O'Connor, director of secondary, and that's calling in from Washington, D.C., where we're at with our Los Osos Middle School staff. And Diane and I are here, so I'm now going to hopefully share screen and share the wonderful work of Zach Roper, our super talented former Teacher of the Year for San Luis Coastal and San Luis County. And Zach put together our senior highlights. Here we go.
Smell the wine and cheap perfume. Oh,
It's hard to imagine that it was only 11 or 12 days ago that we were watching all of these amazing graduates from Pacific Beach, Morro Bay High, and St. Louis High walk across the stage. It's been a long journey for many of us and for all of our students, and we're extremely proud of them. So hopefully it gives you an insight into the celebrations for the class of 2022. Thank you.
Thank you so much. And I'll just throw in that if you watch it, from the link on Board Docs, I've watched it approximately 8 times at my house, shown it to everyone who's happened to be passing through. It comes through really clearly and fluidly. So there's, you know, the joys of technology here. So thank you. Well, Leslie, I'm looking for you, and you are not in the room. And thanks to Mr. Roper for putting this together. It really was a great culmination to the year, and the speeches were great, the celebrations were wonderful. We really appreciate it. So it was great. Yeah, happy faces, as Mrs. Brain is saying. Our next item, we go to public input, and this is the time in our agenda when we open it up to the public for items that they would wish to speak on that may not be addressed at other places in the agenda. The board will listen, but not engage in discussion or take action on items not listed on the agenda due to the Brown Act. Total time for each speaker will be limited to 3 minutes. We do abide by that strictly. And we will ask that, I'm sorry, I'm going all over the place for a minute, but it's my understanding that we do not have a translator this evening. All right, I just wanted to point that out. Our translator is on vacation out of the country and was trying to join us, but apparently has been unable to do so. So we have some requests for public speaking. When you step up to the podium, please announce your name and wait for the 3-minute signal to start, and then feel free to address the board with your topic. Mrs. Roger will read out the names of those wishing to address the board.
Thank you. I have Susie Thule, is that correct? Followed by Kenneth Moore.
We're waiting for
a
All right.
We'll just, okay. Thank you. Your time starts now.
Great. Good evening. I have the pleasure to serve as the Executive Director of Slo Classical Academy. I've been there as a leader and a parent since the school's inception in 2005. Our team at SLOGA consider ourselves as partners with fellow educators in Slo County. Like you, our aim is to serve students with the best education possible to see them thrive now and in the future. SLOGA does this through a timeless education, small class sizes, and an emphasis on the family as collaborators in these endeavors. It has been a privilege to be a small but significant part of the overall vision for Slo County students. And it is our desire to serve the local community for years. We currently serve over 400 infant through high school students, and families are traveling from all over to be a part of that community. Roughly 34% of our families come from Slo proper, 30% each from North and South counties, 5% from North coastal towns, and the rest are coming from as far away as King City and Solvang. Our families love what we do and desire SLOGA to be around for years to come. We have been renting space at the old Pacheco campus since the middle of our first year. It has been a wonderful home for us, and we've enjoyed a good, solid working relationship with the district via Ryan Pinkerton and others. We have, however, also been actively and aggressively looking for a long-term site for 9 years. You may not be surprised that this has proved a difficult and frustrating task in this area. During a meeting with Mr. Pinkerton in March of this year, we were notified that we will have to move from our grand campus in just 2 short years by June 30th, 2024. This is, as you might imagine, not only difficult to swallow, but a massive blow for our community. You, who are all in the business of education, know that uprooting and relocating an organization our size and its families in that time frame will be next to, if not impossible. This puts us in an incredibly stressful and difficult position. We're here tonight to let you know that we have come up with a win-win solution for not only SLOGA, but we think for the district. This solution was sent to Ryan earlier this month with an appeal that the board seriously consider our proposal. Ken Moore, our board president, will share a bit more about that plan this evening. In closing, I'm asking the board tonight to please thoughtfully consider continuing to work with Slo Classical Academy. The clock is ticking. 2 years will be here in the blink of an eye. Let's continue to partner to serve Slo County students, their families, and our greater community. Thank you.
Thank you. Now we have Mr. Kenneth Moore.
Good evening. Thank you for the opportunity to speak briefly. My name is Kenneth Moore, and I have the privilege of chairing the San Luis Obispo Classical Academy Board of Directors. As you all well know, the job of a school board is a difficult one, and I'm quite sure that your responsibilities overseeing a public school district are a lot more complicated than ours. However, I think in one important respect, I would bet there's near perfect overlap, and that is ensuring our students have the greatest place to attend school within the confines of our respective budgets. As Susie mentioned, we recently submitted a proposal to Mr. Pinkerton to extend SLOCA's lease of the Teach campus for the long term after learning that our current lease would end in June of 2024. We look forward to discussing that proposal in earnest with Mr. Pinkerton, Dr. Prater, and you all. Our offer was informed by two recent studies the district completed that Mr. Pinkerton recommended to us. Those were a demographic study and an updated facility master plan. Informed by those studies, we firmly believe that a long-term lease to SLOCA of 165 Grand Avenue will provide significant financial benefit to both the district and to SLOCA, funds that can be used in your general budget to support teachers and students directly while securing a long-term home for SLOCA. We are proposing to lease the entire site and take over all maintenance and improvement obligations for an initial 35 years, an initial rent payment of $399,000 a year, escalating 2% annually. Contrast $400,000 in income to what we estimate will be at least $774,000 in debt servicing costs if the $12 million in remodeling expenses shown in the facility master plan to that campus are made. Our proposal represents a $1.2 million annual net gain to the district. It's rare for a school district with an underutilized asset like the Teach Campus, to be fortunate enough to have a tenant in a position to rent, maintain, and improve that campus for 35 years while still keeping that property within your portfolio. We hope you find the proposal compelling. As Susie mentioned, and Ryan can attest, we have been searching for a permanent home for 9 long years. Finding a home for a private school in San Luis Obispo County is not easy. Zoning that allows for schools is extremely limited. Finding a home when there are only 2 years to do so ratchets up the stakes enormously. We greatly appreciate the long relationship we've had with the district, and in particular with Ryan, who's been our primary point of contact throughout our lease. We look forward to deepening that relationship with a longer-term lease to the Teach Campus that benefits us all. Thank you again for the opportunity to speak tonight.
Thank you. Next, we have Cozy Falser, followed by David Baldwin.
Hello. My name is Cozy Faber. It is really my honor to be here today, and I really want to thank you for creating a space that we can come and talk to you. So my husband and I have lived in SLO County for 19 years, and we have 2 children. Both of them started their education at SLOCA when they were in kindergarten and followed it all the way through to high school and graduated in SLOCA High School's 2020 graduating class. Today, I am proud say that one is pursuing ballet. She's in New York City right now at ABT, and the other is dancing with a small conservatory in Chicago. So in addition to having 2 students that attend SLOCA, I also serve on SLOCA's leadership team as the development director. One of the most important part of my job is to connect our school with the community members of San Luis Obispo. And we are really striving, one of our aspirations is to be a pillar here in the community of San Luis Obispo and to give back to the people of SLO beyond just our community of families. So to this end, we have developed many beautiful relationships with local businesses and government agencies here in SLO. Mayor Stewart, Supervisors Arnold, Ortiz Legg, and Gibson, just to name a few. But in having my finger on the pulse of what our community needs and what young families here in SLOCA are thirsty for is another one of my priorities. And what is happening at SLOCA is an education that many, many people seek. We have families who have moved to SLO to attend SLOCA. We have other families who haven't moved away from SLO because they want to stay at SLOCA, and they cite SLOCA as the driver of that decision. We provide a collaborative approach where students are on campus 2 days a week and they're at home the rest of the time. In fact, we've been doing hybrid 16 years before the pandemic derailed everything. And hybrid education has become a part of the standard vernacular. And now, as we prepare to enter our 18th year, I am proud to say that SLOCA is no longer a startup. We've got 400 kids from cradle to college, right? We started our infant care program to serve our families, our staff and our teachers. And it really defines us as a family-friendly workplace. But beyond that, we have opened the doors of this program and count many Cal Poly professors and other local professionals seeking child care a part of our SLOCA community. And we are proud to be in a position to meet the great and growing need for 0-5 care here in our city. Thank you.
Thank you. David Baldwin.
Hi there. I'm David Baldwin. I'm the business manager for the Plumbers and Pipefitters Union here in San Luis Obispo County. I represent around 350 plumbers, pipefitters, pipe welders, HVAC and refrigeration technicians. I had the pleasure of attending the career fair at Pacific Beach. I believe it was on the 8th. I don't know if I got that right, but I wanted to say thank you for everyone here on the board and for everyone at Pacific Beach that made sure that we got there and had a space there. I thoroughly enjoyed. I was there myself and talked to many of those students myself. every single one of them was articulate, was courteous, inquisitive, everything you'd want to see from a young person interested in a career in the building trades. I wish I could take every single one of them in our apprenticeship program from what I saw. But one thing we need here in the trades is we need partnerships with our school districts like this one and the other ones in the county. What you folks typically, I think, call CTE, we call apprenticeship. And we know that that's another path for some students that either cannot or don't want to choose the traditional four-year college path. Obviously, we respect the college path, but we just know that the building trades is another path that also provides a livable wage, things like healthcare for you and your families, and retirement with dignity. I hope that that some of you will maybe take me up on I'm throwing out an offer here to come and talk more, or even come and see our training center right here in San Luis Obispo, where we train in the pipe trades. But we train both refrigeration and pipe trades, pipe welding here, and we also have a state approved apprenticeship program where we can dispatch apprentices out on to local projects here in the county, like some of the work you have going on your bond measure. And we hope that there's more opportunity, and I should say we know that there's more opportunity for us to work with you on your bond work. And when we do that, it means that local workers won't be left out of the process. What happens sometimes in the building trades is out-of-area or out-of-state employers win the bids on your projects, and they bring with them a workforce, even their own apprentices, and our local folks, like the kids I met at Pacific Beach, don't get the opportunity to work on projects right in their own county, where their tax dollars are, where they live, where they patronize local businesses, and the area suffers from that. We know up and down the state that we see districts that do work with the building trades, and for those districts, that's changed. That's no longer the case. And in the process, we can also do a whole bunch of other great things, programs that work with the building trades, like Helmets to Hard Hats, where we take veterans transitioning or any underserved portion of the community, where we can put them in these apprenticeship programs, get them viable employment and in a real career. So I thank you very much, and I appreciate it.
I don't have any additional written requests to speak.
Is there anyone else who would like to address the board at this time? Mr. Bartlett, I see you back there. I don't know if anyone else. All right. Is there, and we had, it's my understanding that we received no written public comment. Is that correct, Ms. Dawson? Thank you. All right. Thank you very much. All of you came. We appreciate it. Although we can't respond or engage, we do listen carefully. So thank you. All right. Next, we will move to the superintendent's updates portion of our agenda. 8.01 is our business and budget update.
Yeah, a couple of things just for the board. Expanded summer school started. I'm sure Diane Frost will talk a little bit about it, but a lot of students all over the school district participating. So to be expected, a few hiccups day one, right, as you're getting started, a lot of new staff, but a lot of smiling faces this morning when I was out in front of Slow High welcoming kids in. And I look forward to going to all the sites tomorrow just to check in, make sure that everybody is tied in. Of course, safety right now is a something that is a huge concern. We got a lot of emails, calls towards the last couple of months of the school year. And so try to kind of share some of the things that we've done as a school district prior to COVID, and also the fact that we're going to be ramping that up. So I had the opportunity with Diane Frost to meet with Resolute Associates to kind of kick back in that all that safety work that we had done 2 years ago prior to the pandemic, and look forward to sharing with the board kind of an updated safety portfolio, I would say, of all the plans, as well as a kind of an ongoing training calendar as well. So I'll be bringing that to you in the fall. And really look forward to kind of kicking some of those things in as we start the school year. at tying into school safety, the Morro Bay City Council had asked me to come and speak at their council meeting. So I had the opportunity to join them. We had the police chief of Morro Bay was there, and we just kind of went back and forth. He described some of the things that the city does in terms of, again, this was mainly focused on the Uvalde incident and what the police would do in response, those types of things. But it was nice for me to also share the list of things that we've done so far in San Luis Coastal and really focus on the positive relationship we have with the city of Morro Bay, with our SRO that the district funds, and just, you know, the fact that they will be tied in and part of our conversation moving forward with safety. So I just wanted to share those few things with the board.
Our educational services update.
Hi, Diane Frost here. Hope you guys can hear me. In Washington, D.C. with Mr. O'Connor, as he mentioned earlier, we are so happy to be here with members from Los Osos Middle School who are being honored as a national school to watch. So really, really important news coming from the coast. Just a couple of things from Education Services. We did have Dr. Michael McDowell with us all last week, 5 days, working on clarity with our teachers, our principals, and our instructional leadership team. This work addresses first best instruction across every classroom in San Luis Coastal. And, you know, I have to give a shout out to all of the teachers, all of the administrators who finished school 1 week and came back the next week to plan for the following year. It was a wonderful, wonderful workshop, and I'm really proud of all the people who attended. You're going to hear this a couple of times, and I'm so glad that Mr. Pinkerton brought it up as well. Summer experience started this week. We're really proud of the program that San Luis Coastal is able to offer. Jeff Martin, Debbie Blow, Jeff's team, they're going to be here this evening telling you some specifics about the program, but know that we have over 2,700 kids participating across 5 campuses. So really, really a wonderful start for our community. And then finally, Mr. O'Connor showed wonderful, wonderful video from our high schools and their celebrations at the end of the year. Know that our elementaries and middle schools were honoring their kids as well. Our elementary schools on the coast did 5th grade promotions. Our elementary schools in San Luis Obispo did promotions of their 6th graders to the middle school. And our middle schools, really led by their parents, provide an amazing evening for their 8th graders, dance, event night, just a celebration of their time in middle school. That's it for tonight. Thanks.
Our Measure D update.
Yeah, just a couple things to share with the board. Morro Bay High School, of course, they are kind of raring to go with the theater, the cafeteria, multi-purpose room, as the board knows. So things are, you know, kind of ratcheting up. Not as affected in terms of summer school there, but I will say it's slow high. There's a lot of projects happening. And so this kudos to the kids that they're navigating, you know, certain pathways. You know, had to figure things out. I walked some kids kind of back and forth first day of summer school. But they, I mean, literally kids that are 10-year-olds, right? So it's 5th grade through 12th grade at Slo High in Morro Bay. And they were, I mean, you know, going from the gym up to Taylor Field, coming back. I mean, just if being able to navigate that as a 10-year-old, like these kids are, I mean, just unbelievable, right? So we are working on bringing the drone class as well as the athletic one down to just make it a little bit easier for them. It's been hot the last couple of days, walking up those steps. But just again, just a couple of things. So there's a lot of work happening. We do have our July 14th meeting, right, where I'll kind of give a little bit more in depth, kind of where we're at with, and we will have our last GMP at that meeting to share with the board in terms of Measure D projects. And we'll give you an update then.
Come on. Next we're moving on to resolutions. Our first one is resolution number 292122, delegation of signature authority.
And if it pleases the board, it may be better for me to, because I have my camera on, so the audience can actually see me if I stay here. Is that okay?
Sure.
Okay. So the first one is just our annual kind of update of the signature authority. By passing this resolution tonight, the board is basically saying who they delegate to be able to sign contracts and documents for the school district.
Is there anyone from the public who would like to address the board on this resolution? No one will come back to the board. Any discussion? Then a motion to adopt this resolution?
I'll move approval of resolution number 29-21-22, delegation of signature authority.
I'll second.
You, Ms. Dobler-Drew? Dr. Eisendrath Rogers?
Yes.
Ms. Frame?
Yes.
Ms. Roger?
Yes.
Mr. Buckman?
Yes.
Yes. Thank you. Next is resolution 302122. Yes, refunding general obligation bond. I believe that's Mr. Pinkerton again.
Yes, yeah, so we have Isom and Associates is here to kind of share with the board a quick presentation in regards to the potential refunding of some of our Measure D funds, our Measure D bonds funds. As we've kind of talked to the board a little bit about, school districts have the opportunity to resell the bonds that have already been sold. So it's not the district getting the funds again. It's just a matter of reselling them at a cheaper interest rate, which means that our constituents, when they pay back those bonds, pay at a cheaper rate, which saves them money in the long term. So that's a short snippet, but I'm going to let Mr. Isom or one of his associates jump on, and they will share this presentation with the board. And Mr. Isom is in Alaska right now, joining us with his rugged looks there at the top of the screen. So if he gets kicked off of this presentation, he's got some backup ready to go. So internet is not necessarily, you know, fantastic in where he's at.
That is correct. Good evening, everybody. John Isom with Isom Advisors. Thank you for that somewhat embarrassing introduction rather, Ryan. But yeah, greetings from the wilderness of Alaska and satellite internet that's attached to a tree. So hopefully this thing holds, but I'm going to take you through this real quick. And Ryan did a great job setting the table. I like the analogy of a home loan or home mortgage refi. Most of us are familiar with that concept of you borrow money from a bank. The bank loans you that money. You're making payments. Interest rates go down. And all of a sudden you can say, hey, I can improve those payments by refinancing my home mortgage. In this case, it would be refunding the old bond. So I'm going to just touch a little bit on the background on this specifically and which elements we're refunding and the opportunity before you this evening. So 2018, the district sold its third Series C bonds, about $77 million. And what we're doing is we're refunding a portion of those, particularly the portion that has the highest interest rates. And you can see kind of the punchline on the fourth bullet point there, and we'll get more into the detail. But by doing so, it would save the taxpayers about $3 million. One other key element is kind of a financial analysis that we do, which is a present value calculation as noted in the third bullet point, where it says the present value percentage savings is estimated to be over 9.6%. That's relevant because the GFOA kind of gives us some guidelines and suggests that you do a refunding if you can achieve 3% or better. So we're over three times that kind of criteria, if you will. The last bullet point is also relevant because it's important to note, unlike a home mortgage refi that you can extend the years, these bond refundings, you cannot, by law, extend the term. So we're really just swapping out, you know, one interest rate for another, and the delta between what we would have been paying and what we will now be paying is represented in savings. So next slide. So the big biggie here is interest rate environment. You know, this is why we have the opportunity. It is fleeting. And by that, I mean interest rates are going up. You've probably heard much ado about Feds raising interest rates, et cetera, et cetera. And it's kind of tough to tell here, but I think you can see just on the far right hand side, a dramatic increase. It's a little bit of a sliver, but the last few months we've seen kind of a skyrocketing of rates. We're still well below historic averages. But currently we're at about a 3.16% interest rate environment as it relates to the bond buyer 20. And again, that's why we want to take advantage of this. One of the things that's unique about this refunding is it's known as a private placement, which is different from other types of borrowings that are considered public offerings. And in this instance, you're talking about dealing with a singular bank. In this particular instance, we've got a bank that is willing to lock in these rates. Even though interest rates have gone up, we've got them to agree to a rate lock a few weeks back. And so today, this opportunity really wouldn't even be available if we went off today's interest rates. But this is the name of the game, right? When interest rates go down or if they're lower than what we sold bonds for initially, that's the opportunity that presents itself. Next slide. This is just a comparison of the rates that we're looking to refund, which is represented in yellow. So the old rates, 5%, there's five specific years, 2035 through 39. And what we're going to do is we're going to replace those with interest rates that are just below 3%, 2.98%. And of course, it's that delta between high interest rates and low interest rates that saves us the money. Next slide. This is what it looks like in actual dollars, right? So if we do nothing, the existing debt service is what we owe and what we would continue to pay on. But of course, we're recommending that we do something and that we replace those higher payments with the column represented as the new debt service. And the far right-hand column, of course, is the savings that ranges from about $121,000 up to $205,000 a year. For all taxpayers. Again, that second bullet point here on the left, that's that reminder that not only are we saving a good amount just from a dollar basis, right? $3.2 million, that sounds great. But $3.2 million, if it's financially inefficient, doesn't make sense to do. But here we're saying this makes a lot of sense because it meets that criteria of the present value savings, in this case, 9.6%. When we do that calculation. I can come in the last slide or next step. Yeah, next slide here. So the other nice thing about these private placement opportunities is there's less work to be done. There's less costs associated with it as far as, you know, we don't pay a rating agency. We don't pay insurance. Everybody who works on the financing, there's just less work to do. There's not nearly the same request and strain, if you will, as far as asking district staff to do a bunch of things. So when you fit in this box, this little private placement box, it really works out well. But you can see some of the key things here, many of which have kind of already taken place, which is basically getting it teed up. The bank does their due diligence just to make sure that internally this is a credit that they feel comfortable with. We know the district has a fantastic credit already, having met with the rating agencies. But each of these banks likes to do their own due diligence. You've got your trustee approval, this opportunity tonight, right? That's the legal documents that basically say, as a board, we think this has merit. Let's proceed. And in so doing, we'll direct the financing team, the district administration, and the bank to go ahead and complete this financing on behalf of the district. If all goes well tonight, tomorrow the district would formally sign off on what's known as the bond purchase agreement, and then a couple of weeks of legal documents that need to be reviewed and signed and ultimately closed. Right now we're looking at July 12th. So ultimately the way the mechanics works here is there is no refund in the sense there's no dollars that are coming back to you or for the taxpayers for that matter. Essentially what happens is that future payments have now been reduced. So instead of paying those higher dollar amounts, you know, now we're paying $120,000 per year less or $206,000 less per year. So that concludes my presentation. Happy to take any questions that you guys have on it. It's a fantastic opportunity, certainly from the district, and one that we recommend as fiduciary.
I believe Ms. Roger has a question.
Thank you. Mr. Isom, I'm wondering how the percentage of this private placement refunding, how was the percentage of the third rollout determined? Since this is only a portion of the third rollout, how did that come about?
Yeah, so it's a great question. We essentially looked for the least financially efficient, right? Basically, those with the highest interest rates and those that are the farthest out. So when you say, what costs me the most money as a district, it's going to be the bonds that have the highest rates and that are the furthest out. So you can see here, right, these bonds from 2035 to 2039 at 5%, they check both of those boxes. And doesn't mean that we can't come back and refund bonds, you know, 2027 through 2034 or any other number of combinations, or the Series A or the Series B. There's a bunch of different bonds that we will ultimately be looking at refunding. But these were the ones that fit that criteria of how do I maximize the benefit to the property taxpayers in the district, target the high interest rate bonds that go long.
Thank you. I understand. And that term refunding is unfortunate because it sounds like something is coming back. Yeah, it needs to be pronounced refunding.
Or refinancing. Yeah, they're somewhat interchangeable. Yeah, kind of like a home mortgage refi. You're not getting any extra money, but you are getting lower payments going forward. And that's the same concept here. It's lower payments going forward for property taxpayers.
Thank you, John.
Is there anyone from the public who would like to address the board on this item? And we'll come back to the board for discussion. This is an action item. Is there anyone? Any discussion prior to or a motion? There's no discussion. Would someone care to make a motion? So we have a motion by Mr. Buckman, a second by Ms. Frain regarding passage of resolution number 302122, refunding general bond obligation bond. Mr. Buckman. Ms. Dobler-Drew. Dr. Eisenbeth Rogers.
Yes.
Ms. Frain.
Yes.
Ms. Roger.
Yes.
And I'm a yes. Motion passes. Thank you. Thanks, John.
Yeah, congratulations. Yeah.
Have fun in Alaska.
Unlike the other bond sales. Yeah. Unlike the other bond sales where you have to wait a little bit to see what the final results are. With these private placements, it's locked in. So over $3.1 million in savings to taxpayers. So congratulations, everybody.
Yeah. Thank you. Thanks, John. Thanks a lot.
All right. Take care. Bye-bye.
Yep. I've been asked by Ms. Dawson, who's diligently trying to keep our minutes over there, if we would please turn on mics when voting so she can keep track. Thank you. Next is our summer experience update number 3. I'm not sure who's doing this.
Mr. Martin's here.
Yes. This will be that's me. Mr. Martin?
Mr. Martin. Yay.
Yes. Hello. Good evening.
Hi.
So good evening, guests, cabinet, and board members. I will be sharing with you this evening some information about our summer experience, and I'm going to be presenting with Debbie Blow, who's our partner on our planning team. Debbie, would you like to say hello?
Hello, everyone. It's great to be here.
Thank you. Good to see you.
All right. Can you see the presentation?
No.
I will share my screen. Make sure you can see that one more time. How about now?
Yes. Thank you.
All right, you bet. So, like Diane and Ryan mentioned, we're up and running with our summer experience. We haven't talked about our program for a few months, so there's a lot to kind of bring you up to speed on. And our goal tonight is to really just kind of give you that overview, kind of bring you up to speed with where we're at currently, and just kind of provide some of that context for you from kind of where we were even at the start of our development of this program a couple of years ago. So I'd like to report that we started our summer experience program yesterday, and overall it was very successful. We have programs all the way from our first grade groups at our elementary schools all the way through 12th grade, and across five school sites, over 2,700 students. And, you know, with the exception of a few hiccups here and there, a lot of smiling faces, like Ryan mentioned, and just a lot of good news to report. So we're really proud and thankful for that. So the first thing I want to do is mention the planning team. This has been a very big endeavor, and it's required a lot of people. And the credit really goes, we're out here looking at the number of staff and the students in place and the success so far. It really goes to these people on this list. It's a tremendous amount of effort and coordination from our kind of central planning team, from Jessica Jurek, Emily King, Susan Holes, people like Chelsea Smiley, who's coordinating all supplies, Debbie, of course, here that's with us tonight, everybody who secretarial teams, throughout the district, all of the different departments up here at the district office coordinating and working together, from IS&T to HR to fiscal. I mean, really, truly a big responsibility to kind of coordinate this program and get it off the ground. And I just want to say, you know, publicly thank all of these people for all of their hard work. So, Debbie, do you want to talk a little bit about our kind of the backstory to summer experience?
Yes, I'd love to. What you're seeing with the start of school this week is the culmination of almost 2 years of work. It's hard to believe, but this process actually started in January of 2020 with the committee that was convened in the school district. That committee had a variety of stakeholders, administrators, parents, teachers, classified staff. And they took a look at best practices and research and talked about what a unique summer learning experience would look like for students. Then with the advent of COVID, some of that kind of had to go on the back burner that first summer of 2020. But the group reconvened in January of 2021. I was invited to come in and take on moving forward using the work that was started in 2021, and had many of the same participants on that committee, but we worked together to create a framework of what this program would look like. And it is a vision for 5 years out. There was a little bit of preliminary work that occurred in last summer. We kind of stuck our toes in a little bit at the elementary school, where we offered some enrichment classes in the afternoon, but it really went into full speed in January of this year. And what you have in front of you on the screen is the vision that was established, as well as the goals. And there are five goal areas. Academic achievement, of course, we want to make sure that our students are making measurable progress in academic areas. The program needs to be open to all students, and students need equitable access to this program. It's not just for students needing intervention. It is for all students throughout the district. We want to make sure that it is an extremely engaging program for students, that they are excited to be a part of each year, and that it will help deepen their connections with school. Certainly, this will be taught by a high-quality staff, and part of that high-quality staff is also reaching out and having a lot of community partnerships. And then finally, we want to make sure there's a quality of care. So food, transportation, and child care are vital components of this program. So what is summer experience? As I said, we looked at research and the best practices, and best practices say it's not just a program for intervention. It is not a program where students are invited and have to feel like they had to attend because they were not being successful at school. This summer experience program is open to all students. We're excited that it is free of charge, and it is a program based upon choice and flexibility. And you're going to see, this is really exciting. Students have the option of either the first 3 weeks or the second 3 weeks of a 6-week program, or they can attend all 6 weeks. And then even within the school day, students have a choice between, there's three offerings each day, even at the first through fourth grade program. So students can attend three sections of the day. They can attend one section. They can attend just the morning. But a great deal of choice in scheduling options. We also wanted to make sure that it was balanced. So there are core academic instruction programs, as well as a variety of really exciting enrichment programs. And we wanted to make sure, again, that we're providing and meeting parent needs. So we have transportation, childcare, and food services provided through all of our programs. So what's been done so far? As Jeff mentioned, this has been a big opportunity and a lot of heavy lifting, a great team. The first thing was setting up the program. And I guess I would equate it a little bit to opening a brand new school, but with 2,700 students. So we had to look at master schedules at all of the levels, the first through fourth, fifth through eighth, and the high school levels. What's the curriculum going to be? Looking at staffing assignments, determining what our enrollment was going to be, and then making sure we had the teachers and staff to fulfill that enrollment, and then ordering the materials, deciding on the curriculum, and finally, staff training, which took place over the last month. Where are we now? As we said, the first day of school was June 20th. We're going to continue to monitor the program as we move forward and launch it, look at the tweaks that need to be made. Then we prepare to do the second 3-week session. The majority of our students are participating in both sessions, but we have some that will only be participating in the second. And then collecting data throughout this process. When summer school is finished, we're going to take a look at the data and compare it to our metrics. We'll do surveys and interviews to see how we can improve it and tweak it for next year. And then we'll begin planning for summer 2023. So how are we going to know that we've met our goals? And one of the big things when we were putting the framework together was, let's establish that from the beginning. How will we measure our success? What are those metrics going to be? So what you're going to see in this slide and the next slide is that we wanted to ensure there were metrics under each of those 5 goal areas that I mentioned earlier. So as you can see, we're going to do pre and post academic data. How many high school courses are completed? How many credits have been earned? What grades have been improved? We want to look at survey results to see that we've reached out to all facets of our community with parents and students. How many different programs have we offered? Some of that you'll see tonight. And then what is the makeup of our students that are participating? As far as looking at engagement, attendance is going to be a big indicator of that. So are our students starting and finishing the courses? We're hoping in the future to see increased enrollment and have fewer students dropping. Sometimes with summer school, you'll have students start but then drop. We want to see a decrease in those numbers. Again, what's our return rate? And we're going to be doing some focus groups and gathering data from that. Then in the other 2 areas, the program quality, some of these data we already have. How many teachers applied? What is the credentialing of our staff? How many community partnerships do we have? What class sizes are we able to offer? And then as we mentioned, we want to make sure we have quality care. So we'll be looking at how many students are accessing childcare, how many meals we're serving, and then the transportation that's occurring. So all of this will help us as we're moving forward and evaluating our program success.
Thank you, Debbie. So with this kind of level of coordination, a level of choice that was built into our program, right? That was one of the key tenets. We wanted to offer families, students, the choice to attend maybe one class for a three-week session, all the way up to six classes for both three-week sessions. With that level of support, of choice, that was built into the program, we really needed to kind of build in some extra supports for students. So this is just an example of one of the things that we put in place to help some of our youngest learners be successful. Because when you think about, with that choice comes kind of a different program design, right? When you think about what our elementary schools typically look like, traditionally look like, we have our kindergarten students that are walked in a single file line and passed on to our kindergarten an art teacher, right? Or teachers are escorting their class and turning them over to the next adult, like a PE teacher. And we keep those groups of students together. With this level of choice, it means that students have different schedules. All students will have different schedules throughout the day. So they would have to basically like a high school schedule where there's passing periods, and then they have to go find a completely unique classroom during the next period of the day. And that's very unfamiliar to us. So this is something that we put in place to make sure that students were getting from one classroom to the next. And there was a lot of support that we offered in terms of training for staff and families as well to make sure that this was successful. And I'm happy to report that despite some naysayers and people saying that it couldn't be done, that it was really impressive to see how capable students are at getting and flexible they are and being able to go from one class to a different class to a third class, all different places with different teachers throughout the school day. It was pretty impressive. So along the lines of that support for our summer experience staff, we've really put together, with the help of Emily King and Jessica Jurek, the virtual binders. We've done a lot of in-person trainings as well as virtual trainings. Because when you think about it, we have a lot of knowledge as a planning team about all of the ins and outs that go into making this happen. But when you have almost 200 staff members, about half of which are district employees, you can imagine how, and you're hiring all these people to come together to start a program, there's a lot of coordination that needs to happen between those people. We need to kind of transfer that knowledge, if you will, that we have as a planning team for everybody that's coming on board with this. And that's a really big task, because not only are some of them not district employees, but they're new to the district or they're new to the position that they're taking on. And so we have people that were being hired as, for example, instructional aides or campus monitors or counselor aides, and say, what does that job entail, right? So there's a high level of coordination that needs to happen. And so these resources really helped us get there and transfer that knowledge from our planning team to all of the staff. So I'm going to throw some interesting statistics up here for you to digest, right? Let's take a look at our summer experience registration and how it breaks down between elementary, middle, and high school. To me, these are some interesting numbers here. And you can see that, again, we have our elementary programs with just grades 1 through 4 at our three elementary school sites. And between those three elementary school sites, we had over 1,186 students signing up. The majority of those students are signing up for the full day program, both 3-week sessions. And those enrichment classes are definitely popular. Everything from culinary to STEAM, sports, drawing, painting, drama, leadership. At our middle school programs, 830 students signed up, 5th through 8th grade. And again, these are the students that are being hosted at our two comprehensive high schools. And you can see that some of those are the most popular enrichment classes: swimming, ceramics, culinary, the drone class, video game coding, and skateboard building. Lots of smiles on faces as I walked around today with some of the students really enjoying some of these unique learning opportunities that we're providing for them. And at the high school level, we have 732 students signed up, 270 from Morro Bay High, over 460 from San Luis High School. And the majority of those students are taking classes for original credit, but we do have over 200 students taking classes in person to get that personalized support from a teacher so that they can make sure to get those credits that they need. And we're kind of seeing a group here that was impacted a couple of years ago by the distance learning. Some of those students really struggled to earn credits during that time. And so we want them to be able to be in person with the teacher support so that we can make sure they get what they need to earn those credits so that they're on track to graduate. So here are some numbers. Here's enrollment at each of our summer experience host school sites. This is spanning session one and session two. These are individual students that are enrolled. So you can see our biggest site with San Luis Obispo High School with our 5th through 8th and our 9th through 12th graders with 532. Oh, I'm sorry. This is just for 1st through 8th grade. Excuse me. 532 students. And there's our high school program enrollment, which we just talked about. And I also broke it out by grade level just to see how many students across the district in each of these grades are participating in our summer experience program. And you can see some pretty impressive numbers, especially at our primary grades. And what I asked Jessica Mueller to do is to do me a favor. Like, for example, this 308 in first grade, how many students is that 308 of the entire first grade population in our district? So almost 2/3 of our first graders in the district are participating in summer experience. And you can see those percentages kind of decrease as a general trend, right? Down into the upper grades, 7th and 8th, which kind of makes sense, right? We have families. This is a real childcare need, population, a group that really requires some supervision during the day. And this is an opportunity for them to have some fun, unique learning opportunities and still know that they're safe and secure during this school day. And here's a breakdown by each school and their percentage of participation. What percentage of their students are participating in summer experience? Kind of an outlier there. You can see Pacheco with almost 2/3 of its students are signed up. 320. So a testament to their staff for really working with their families to make sure those families were signed up. We did give schools an opportunity to identify students who really would benefit, have high needs and might benefit most from our program, and they were allowed early registration. All right, so they were allowed to connect with those families, get those families signed up who might benefit the most before it was open to everybody to register. We've talked about some of these numbers already, but here it is again, just total number of staff hired. You can see there's a breakdown there between certificated staff and classified staff. It's about equal number, so about 175 staff members across the board and different roles and different positions to support our students and one another in our programs. And we interviewed all of those employees, over 250 candidates that we interviewed for these positions. And like I mentioned, just under half of our certificated staff are existing San Luis Coastal employees, which I thought was an interesting statistic. We did hire several certificated staff from outside the district. And so it's nice to be able to see kind of this cross-pollination of different staff members coming together from different backgrounds of experience in different districts. And that's a nice thing for people to meet others who do things maybe a little bit differently than we do and kind of get ideas and collaborate together over the summer. another added benefit to this program. And I gave this, this was kind of one of my promotional flyer statistics. I put it out there for people to see. I think it was nice to be able to know, like, what does this mean for pay for people who want to teach in the summer? So for our in-district employees, they earn their regular rate of pay on an hourly basis. And that can break down to about $6,000 for 6 weeks for a first-year teacher. And at the top end, if you're a veteran teacher at the top end of the salary schedule, that's about $14,000. For the working the entire 6 week program over summer. So not a bad pay, not a bad bump for a nice vacation or whatever you want to use that money for. And then the classified folks would be earning their regular rate of pay if they're in the same position. Probably important to note too, as we look at that, obviously with the number of staff and you start doing the math in your head, this is a lot. This program is fairly expensive, right? Right. When you take a look at the amount of money that is when you start adding that up. And so it's probably important to note that there are state funds available for extended school day or extended school year programs. There are some requirements to be met, but this could potentially offset our program costs into the future. Debbie, do you want to talk a little bit about our community and organizational partners?
Sure. Well, as you can see from this slide, and as I mentioned earlier, that was one of our success criteria. We really wanted to make sure we were reaching out and bringing the community in. And childcare before and after school is being provided by our community partners with Parks and Rec. We also, this is an exciting partnership with the Creeklands Conservation, where students are actually going out and working in the habitat at San Luis Creek. One of our offerings is the Leader in Me, the Franklin Covey program, which is very good for our students. And then Children's Creative Project has really helped with staffing our visual and performing arts programs. And we've been excited to work with Cal Poly. Some of our classified employees, staff for this summer, are actually Cal Poly students that want to be teachers in the future. What a great opportunity for them. They're getting the opportunity to work with students and they're getting paid at the same time. So we're very excited about the partnerships that we've started this year, and we're going to continue to expand upon those for next year. And then the timeline, I think I already went through with you a little bit. As you can see, we're now towards the end of this timeline and we'll get into July. And then we're going to start the timeline all over again for 2023, but with a lot more experience and a lot more ability to look at, hey, this really worked well. We want to build on this. Here's some things that we want to tweak in the future.
All right. Are there any questions that we can help?
Thank you for thanks for that thorough presentation. First, I will see if there's anyone from the public who wishes to address the board about the summer experience program. No one here? Ms. Dawson, anyone online? All right, then we'll come back to the board. Any questions, comments from Mr. Buckman?
I don't know how many O's there are in WOW, but just WOW. This is just amazing, and I'm so excited to see the extension of education into the summer months. I did have one question, and it's regarding the combining of the schools. We have kids that are going fairly close and some kids that seem to be traveling fairly far. So, for example, Hawthorne is going over to Sinsheimer. Can you tell me about the transportation that makes that possible?
So we are offering transportation. And so we have coordinated with our transportation department, and they've surprisingly, I guess I thought, oh my gosh, this is going to be such a massive, effort to have so many bus stops for so many people around our district, but they've managed to do a really good job. Mr. Tarver over there with Deborah, really, and their team have really done a great job of creating a transportation schedule. And really it's been working smooth. I mean, there's getting students picked up on time and dropped off on time for school across the district in the first couple of days. So it's been impressive.
And do you think that we get more kids from the schools that are coming in if they were closer, or is that something that'll grow in the future? I'm just a little concerned about which schools have been chosen for busing and which haven't.
I guess maybe I could ask a clarifying question. Which schools have been chosen for busing? Meaning, because all of our students are able to access the transportation.
Right. But so the Hawthorne, if I was at Sinsheimer, I'd just be going to my home school. Sorry. That's busing from one school to somebody else's home school.
Yeah. So if it's being hosted at your home school, then you may not require the busing, right?
Right.
Yeah. So again, we have to talk about what that looks like over the course of the next several years. The initial thought was to possibly share or rotate this summer experience program throughout our schools so that there's some equity in terms of access and location, and also just the impact. It would lessen the impact from a facility standpoint for some of our host, because when you host this year after year, there's really not a lot of downtime, right, to get in there and do some of that deep cleaning and some of the maintenance that you might otherwise be able to do. And sites like CL Smith and Hawthorne over the last several years have kind of hosted every single year. So we'll have to have that conversation to see if we want to kind of share this and maybe rotate the program between other schools in our district.
Thank you very much. Great answer.
Ms. Frame?
Yes, Mr. Martin, this is a really impressive presentation. I appreciate just kind of the inception and kind of where we are now. I also appreciate the, as you were planning out this program, kind of inclusion of kind of metrics and things that, to kind of guide us in the future. As I drove by some of the sites, I saw a lot of smiling faces. And so it's an exciting program, exciting opportunity for our students. One thing I'm wondering, as you were describing some of the classes, I kind of wanted to sign up myself for some of those classes, but will you be digging into, what courses were really, high interest, highly attended, and so those classes, would be, offered or repeated? I mean, it was really, Mr. Martin, an impressive presentation. I know it took a lot of coordination, a lot of effort, so kudos to your entire team.
Thank you.
Thank you. There's no further discussion or questions on this topic. I believe we'll call for a break at this time before we get into all our approvals and authorizations. So it's right about 6:30. So let's take a 10-minute break. Be back at 6:40. Thank you very much. All right, we're back on. Thank you. So now we're moving on to item 10.02, which is the safe sports policy. And is Mr. O'Connor present?
Diane Frost here with Mr. O'Connor.
Exactly. Oh, look at you staying up late to help us out here.
Exactly. Thank you. Hey, Mandy, can I have sharing rights? All right, thank you. I'm hoping everybody can see our presentation now. Yes?
All right.
Thank you very much for allowing us to present this evening. This is our second presentation regarding the 2022 Safe Sports Policy. Our Board of Education might remember that on May 12th, we had a study session where we did a comprehensive overview of this new Safe Sports Policy. Today, we're going to be presenting a little bit more broad view of the policy and the process we took to create the plan and vet the plan. And then certainly we have an opportunity for questions from the board and the public.
So obviously, as we begin this evening, our goal is to, as always, make sure that our students and our student athletes are safe. You know, when we talk about our safety of our student athletes as being our priority, we're talking about our physical safety. We're talking about the social and emotional safety. We're talking about well-being. And well-being, we're talking about nutrition. We're talking about positive outcomes, considering the fact that probably 99% of our high school athletes will end their athletic competition after high school. We're not talking about that student athlete or that large percentage of student athletes moving on to the collegiate or even professional ranks, but we're really wanting to make sure that we support our student athletes whilst in our area of competition.
Thank you. So I wanted to also remind the board and the public that the Safe Sports Policy is one of a couple of policies that we have either created or are in the process of creating. Safe Sports Policy, by its name, looks at our student athletes and their safety. To support the Safe Sports Policy, we also have an athletics handbook that hits the ground floor. We have an athletic trainer's handbook that really guides that part of the athletic program that we offer. And then we are beginning to work on our booster guidelines. We have very, very robust booster clubs at both of our high schools, but we're working to just shore up our systems there as well. And then once we leave our Safe Sports Policy, we are going to tackle a safe co-curricular policy. So all of those clubs and activities that our students participate in, really standardizing the practice there, and then looking at our ASB guidelines as well.
So as Mrs. Frost talked about, we really wanted to bring systems and structures and greater alignment with regard to our Safe Sports Policy. We obviously wanted to look at reference material, and we started that development process looking at state and federal law. We also looked at U.S. Center for Safe Sports, and we really leaned heavily into USA Gymnastics and Safe Sports Policy there. But obviously, when we start to look at those larger reference materials, we always go back to our board policies. We look at our board policies. We look at our administrative regs. And then governing our schools in our competition, we have CIF policy. And all of this is important because we then bring that to our stakeholders, and we meet with our secondary administrators. We meet with our athletic directors. We meet with our coaches on site. We talked with our booster clubs. And then we drilled all the way down to meeting with our students and our student athletes. And obviously, as Diane mentioned, we also had that study session back in early May with regard to you, the Board of Education. So our development process, this is been about 6 to 7 months in the works, and we really felt that we've really put a lot of time into this, and we've really worked through bringing our stakeholders along.
Just to give you an idea, and we looked at this in our study session as well, our Safe Sports Policy is very comprehensive. You'll see that we have sections that address parents and guardians, our student athletes, and our athletic coaches and volunteers. And under each of these, we have sections that are pertinent to each group. Training across the group. We talk about behaviors, drug and alcohol use, electronic communication, one-to-one contact, lodging, overnight travel. So we really, really did try to hit all those finite areas of an athletic program that are necessary to address when you talk about student safety.
The centerpiece, as Mrs. Frost talked about, is the training for athletic staff. When we consider athletic staff, we're talking about our head coaches, our assistant coaches, JV coaches, walk-on coaches, volunteers, assistants, whatever that terminology, anyone who's coming in contact with our student athletes needs to be trained. And we feel that we're putting together that robust training program. And there's that measure of accountability for reporting. Our athletic staff the terminology athletic staff, whether it be a head coach or an assistant coach, needs to understand the accountability for reporting. They also have to understand the athletic structure and be very aware of our inclusivity with regard to the athletics. But based on our training, we're looking at prevention of hazing and bullying. We talk a lot about our one-on-one contact, and we define one-on-one contact, and we give very specific examples of one-on-one contact. We also talk about an ever-changing dynamic of digital communication and social media. It's ever-evolving, and we need to stay up with best practices with regard to that. Safe travel procedures. A lot of our student-athletes compete on our campuses, but they also compete out of our area for tournaments or athletic competition. And then, of course, one of the areas that we really got a lot of feedback from our coaches and our administrators, and we wove into our safe sports policy, focuses on student athlete training and parent training. All of these put together, we need to make sure that in our district, there are avenues for reporting. And we need to be very clear and articulate on how we report and what are our legal obligations as a district, and how do we as a district follow up? And that's what we hope to build out on our safe sports policy.
And then finally, it's important to note that a policy like this should be vetted through those groups who are either going to have to implement the group, work with their own children regarding the policy, or our student athletes. And you can see that we did all of that. So we started with our athletic directors and coaches, and we met with them. We discussed the safe sport policy, and we received feedback from them that has been implemented into the safe sports plan itself. We met with booster parents in a combined meeting between Morro Bay High School and San Luis Obispo High School, went through the plan, and again, received feedback that you will find in this document. They told us what it's like on the ground floor. They told us things that they might want us to alter a bit. They told us some things that were missing in the document. So we go back, we revise, and we move forward from there. And then finally, we met with student athletes themselves. And Mr. O'Connor, he was the one who went to SLO High and went to Morro Bay High School, gathered groups of student athletes and walked them through this process. Would you just tell just a little bit about what that was like to work with the actual student athletes themselves on this policy?
Yeah, thank you. As I mentioned earlier in May, when working with focus groups of student athletes, both male and female, it really resonated and hit at home, the level of detail that we'd gone into, but also the perspectives that they had. There was a lot of leaning into, there was a lot of head nodding, there was a lot of agreement. Student athletes brought up the idea of follow-up with regard to nutrition and health and diet. They talked openly about the social and emotional piece. But I will say this, the number of female athletes in the room who really appreciated and asked follow-up questions and gave positive feedback with regard to our safe sports policy was pretty powerful.
Thank you. And then finally, with board approval, we plan to implement this policy starting in the fall of 2022. We are planning trainings throughout the summer. We'll be working with our athletic directors, working with our coaches, informing our parents, all of those things to make sure that every bit of this is implemented in the best interest of our kids. So we're happy to answer any questions you might have.
Thank you. If it's all right with the board, I'd like to go to the public to see if anyone from the public has a comment or question on this item. Nope. Okay, thank you. And then we'll come back to the board. Mrs. Rogers, followed by Ms. Frame, followed by Mr. Buckman.
Thank you. This is a comprehensive plan, and I'm really happy to see it. My question is, I have heard from parents that we have policies, we have had policies, but they haven't been followed or implemented. So I am wondering how the board will know that this plan has been operationalized.
It's a really good question. I don't think it would be a bad idea for Mr. O'Connor and myself to do an annual presentation to the board. We are currently working on our presentations for our athletic directors and for our coaches. We will be documenting the trainings that they go through, documenting the trainings that our students have to participate in, right? Part of this is that the kids are going through their own version of hazing training. All of that will be documented, and that's something that we can share with the Board of Education.
Thank you.
Ms. Plain, followed by Mr. Buckman.
Oh, thank you, Evelyn. So nice.
You sound surprised.
I'll get you a cookie later. I just had a few questions, and again, I've never seen anything like this. I did AYSO coaching, just all kinds of involvement with youth sports, and this is just incredibly comprehensive. I did have, in the sections on child abuse, they're throughout 24, 35. Some of it's conflicting information, and I'm sure you'll catch it and get it all in line. In one place, it says that child abuse reporting must go, and then it lists certain government agencies. Later on in the document, it says child abuse reporting needs to go through a list of all the way up, a hierarchy all the way up to the superintendent. And so that was a little confusing for me. There's a series. There's three documents, code of conduct at the end. I think it's parents, students, and coaches. And there's so much great involvement of volunteers in the community. I just wondered why there wasn't a code of conduct for a volunteer to sign. Paige?
So our volunteers would sign the coaches' version of the CIF policy as well. Our volunteers who are coaching are officially volunteers, so paperwork through the district. And you'll notice throughout this document that when we talk about coaches and volunteers. So they may be non-paid, but they are still considered coaches, and they will go through the training. They will sign the forms, that type of thing. But a very good question. Thank you.
Yeah. So just for me, it might be an interesting thing to just on that one, just put coaches/volunteer, because throughout the document, there's a fairly good line of distinction between coaches and volunteers. And even the word chaperone comes up later in the document. So that was one thing. We have elementary sport teams now, which is great. Is this have any application to them?
Yeah, Mr. O'Connor has been working with the elementary sports program. Do you want to talk a little bit about how this would be implemented at that level?
Yeah, it's a great question, Mr. Buckman. And not just elementary, but we're talking about secondary as in middle school. We're talking about 6, 7, 8. And, as Mrs. Ross mentioned, we're actually meeting with athletic directors both at the middle school and the high schools as early as next week to start to build this out. Meeting with our team at the secondary level, we're planning a very similar robust process with our elementary kids. When we're working in conjunction with, like, whether it be Cuesta or Cal Poly with the programs that they have to offer to bring fellows, as they call it, into our district, they'll still be going through the same vetting process. They'll still be going through the same training and onboarding process. This systemizes anyone who's interacting with young people with regard to sports throughout our district. We're thinking 5 through 12th grade, 5th through 12th grade.
That's great. The families will get used to it. Everybody will be good. Page 27, there was just a comment. Let me see if I can get there. 4, 25, 26, 27. In the blue box, in the middle of the page 27, there's just a statement here that I didn't understand. Practices to mitigate one-on-one risk. Maintain professional distance with all families. If you could just explain that one to me a little bit.
You know, I think that is advice to our coaches that they maintain the, I'm trying to think of a different way of putting it. They are professionals in our organization. They are not members of our family. We talk in here and with our coaches a little bit about how close you get to families. Are you just emailing back and forth? Are you doing things for specific families, that type of thing? So just the idea that you are the coach of every student on your team, and it's equal measure with every one of those kids, and you kind of maintain that professional distance with the families as much as possible. Leslie, am I missing anything?
No, absolutely the same. You're making sure that there's clear boundaries and parameters, because you're representing an institution, which is the district, and you need to make sure that there's equitable services and communication with everybody.
I understand now. Thank you. And then just lastly, it seems that when I was reading this, and I'm sorry I don't have an exact page, although I think I could find it, there was no health training, medical training required of volunteers. And there was also a place where it says, if you're not a medical person, you can't touch a student. And I'm just wondering about CPR training. And if a kid's obviously needs, you know, CPR, we're going to urge people to do that, if I'm hoping.
Yeah, so I can jump into that one. Obviously, like Mrs. Ross said, anyone who's considered, whether it be a volunteer, assistant coach, coach, absolutely goes through CPR training, concussion protocol training, a heat acclimation training, sudden cardiac arrest. Those are all absolutes that all of our coaches, assistant coaches, volunteers absolutely will go through.
Okay, and then there's this. I think that's got it for me. I appreciate that. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you. First of all, I want to thank, all the work that went into this. It's, as Mrs. Rogers said, it's quite a comprehensive handbook and policy. And I know that parents were actively engaged in really kind of an interactive conversation, as you said, inputting feedback and us taking that feedback, incorporating it into this handbook. And also to you, Mr. O'Connor and Mrs. Frost. I also want to thank Mrs. Rogers, just when she mentioned, she asked a question about receiving potential annual update as to, you know, how the policy is working and if there's any tweaks or anything that need to be made. I would have an interest in that. But I mean, I know it's all new and it's kind of, you guys will be looking closely at how this is working for this year. The other thing is, if you could go back to the last page, not the last page in the presentation, but the page before, because I had a question.
Of the presentation you were saying?
Yeah, please. I'm sorry I didn't write that down.
No, not at all. Trying to get it. Oh, there we go.
No. Okay, when I looked at the booster parents, I just, I was just questioning, when it said under booster parents, social media, single parent, or student in charge, what was that? Was that like a, explain to me that.
One of the things that we talked about in the group was Facebook pages, Instagram accounts, that type of thing. So we talked about having a single person on each site be in charge of the social media for that site.
That clarifies that for me. And then the other thing is, when I was reading I think it was the athletic trainer handbook or something, and I was going through, I noticed that a lot of times, for example, on page 8, it said, like, when slow high school teams travel, they'll be fully stocked with a medical kit. I know that this is draft, but I'm assuming that you really were meaning that it's San Luis Coastal Unified School District, because there was a lot.
Yes, it would be. Yes, San Luis Coastal Unified School District, including Morro Bay, any of our other schools. This was actually the draft that you have in there is the work of the athletic trainer at San Luis Obispo High School. So we will have both athletic trainers together to update it so it represents both schools.
I thought so, Mrs. Frost, just as I was, just a point of clarification myself. But again, thank you very much. Kudos to the parents who are really engaged in this process, and to you and Mr. O'Connor, and to actually our student athletes. That's great.
Yeah.
Thank you.
You're wonderful.
Mr. Buckner?
Yep. Thanks. When I couldn't find it, but there it is, and it's single parent or student in charge. I have to share that. Let me see. That's the best way to put this. When I was the instructor teaching journalism and media at Hancock College, I had 21-year-old kids that would try to get stories in the paper where the first letter of each paragraph would spell something funny. And I'm a little concerned about having students in charge of social media pages. So I'm just wondering whether there's some way we could have some kind of second set of eyes. But that's another decision. Another decision for someone else. But I just have to tell you, I had some pretty lousy experience.
Yeah, actually, this piece of feedback from our booster parents is relative to the fact that what we were finding in some of our teams, a single parent or a single student actually had ownership of an Instagram account or maybe the social media platform, which the feedback from our parents, as you know, is so powerful. It creates a unique culture that's not necessarily the most positive with regard to the team. And we wanted to make sure that there was checks and balances within that social media place. So Mr. Buckman, your point is absolutely on point because we want to make sure that there's a coach or a member of our district faculty with regard to our coaching fraternity in charge of that social media, not a single parent, not a single student, because that causes all sorts of issues. And especially given the parameters of college recruiting and just like you said, media and the ability to be able to push key stories towards the media, if a single parent or a single student is in charge of that, it can be very skewed in a particular direction.
Hey, so a comment I'd like to make is with regard to the student athletes. I am so happy that they were thoughtfully and equally included in this process. I think that some of the terrible events we've seen over the last several years throughout the country with high-end athletes, as high-performing athletes, as well as just at places, you know, like any from just across the board, has resulted from or been contributed to students or the athletes themselves not feeling heard, not feeling valued as individuals, as separate and apart from their any athletic skills they may possess. So I really appreciate especially the nutrition and healthy diet and the social and emotional training, just every item on that list. I very much appreciate they're feeling comfortable and brave enough to provide the input and us for taking it seriously. This is it. So, Ms. Roger.
Yeah, just a quick comment on item 2 under booster parents where it says feedback loop on reporting status of, quote, investigation to reporting party. I have heard from parents that they were very disappointed about occurrences at their high school. They were disappointed that they were not provided more information. And it really needs to be made clear that our hands are tied when it comes to personnel matters, that we just can't share information. They were so emotional and wanting to know, and I totally understand that. And I wasn't obfuscating. I just could not share personnel data. And so that kind of needs to be made clear that we all understand parents need to know, desire to know. But we also all understand our legal obligations.
Thank you. This is an action item. It's my understanding that approval is being sought by the board tonight with regard to approval of the safe sports policy.
I'll make a motion to approve the safe sports a safe sports policy.
Wait, do we have a second?
I'll second.
Thank you. All right, Mr. Buckman?
Yes.
Ms. Dobler-Drew?
Yes.
Ms. Frame?
Yes.
Ms. Roger?
Yes.
And I'm a yes. All right, thank you very much. Thanks for the thorough presentation.
Go to bed.
Thank you all.
You're welcome.
All right, next we have a discussion item on our universal pre-kindergarten program for our update on pre-kindergarten program.
Good evening. As you know, we are beginning a universal pre-kindergarten program, or UPK, also known as UTK. I've heard it referred to as that as well. How do I advance slides on a touch screen, Mandy? Okay, there we go. Thank you very much. Okay, AB 130 indicated, and the governor, that we needed an early learning initiative and to make sure that all four-year-olds have a year before their kindergarten year or a first year of a two-year kindergarten program. It will be phased in over time, but this is now part of the education code. And as all of you know, this has been in the conversation and a topic of conversation for many, many years to have universal pre-kindergarten programs. Our current TK ratio, there is none specified. We do have aides in all of our current TK classrooms, but there is no legal specification as to the ratio of teacher to student. TK eligibility is for children who turn 5 between September 2nd and December 2nd of the current school year. And as you recall, students who were 4 during that period of time could begin kindergarten in previous years, quite a few years past. And with the state moved that date back to September 1st or before turning 5. And so transitional kindergarten filled that gap over that period of time. And then any California state preschool licenses or programs can only be used for preschool services. So these will not be those. The ratio for next year will be 1 adult to 12 students. And then the following year it will reduce from to 1 to 10 students. And my best guess there is as the students get younger, the ratio reduces as to adults to children. And then the eligibility will be expanded. Okay. As you can see here in the green slide, that should be students who turn 5 currently by December 2nd are qualified for transitional kindergarten. Next year, students who turn 5 by February 2nd will qualify for transitional kindergarten. The following year, April 2nd. The year after that, June 2nd. And then in 25-26 school year, all students the full year before kindergarten will qualify for transitional kindergarten. And of course, this will mean that we'll have to have an increasing number of TK classes provided at our elementary school over the years. Next year, we will have 9 TK programs, excluding Teach Elementary School, which does not have a kindergarten program. But the other 9 elementary sites will all have a TK class. And 3 of our preschool classrooms were converted to TK classes, or will be, for this coming school year. And then we added a class at Los Ranchos Elementary School. Okay, the 5 areas that the state asks us to focus on as we plan is to have a vision and coherence of what we're doing over the course of the next few years, and that's to provide a comprehensive, rigorous program for students who are 4 years old. It's not all academics, and the TK teachers will certainly tell you that students learn at that age level through play. And so we've spent the last year meeting with our preschool and TK teachers and developing exactly what that's going to look like. We've engaged with County Office of Education, all of our fellow districts around the county. We've been out to child care agencies at Cuesta College, UMCC, and others to discuss, our phasing in of this universal preschool program. Workforce recruitment is going to be a big area of need moving forward, as there are greater requirements for TK teachers as for regular classroom teachers. And we are in a great place right now for next year. But the following year, we'll probably add 4 to 5 classrooms. That's yet to be determined, in addition to the ones we have now. And we'll need 4 to 5 qualified teachers to assume those classes. And then that will increase the following year after. It's a need and an interest of everyone in the county. And so we're all working with Cal Poly and other colleges to make sure that we have qualified people in place. And that might include us, growing our own and developing our own TK teachers. And I know I've had quite a few conversations over the last 6 or 8 months with people who might qualify for that and discussing what they'll need to be qualified. Curriculum, instruction, and assessment, as I mentioned, is different for four-year-olds than it is for, say, first through sixth graders. And so we have an amazing early learning team of TK and preschool teachers, and they're actively involved in that discussion of what does curriculum, instruction, and assessment look like in a TK classroom. And so we'll continue that conversation on next year. And then in terms of facilities, Mr. Pinkerton has been active in going out to the sites and looking at what our facilities look like right now. As I mentioned, we're really only adding a classroom at Los Ranchos Elementary School. So our facility needs for next year are different than what they'll be the following year and the year after that. But we're already drawing up plans for what our kinder and TK areas will look like at those 9 elementary sites. And we will need to do some construction, some adding of classrooms, purchasing of materials, that kind of thing. We did a lot of purchasing of materials this year, gave teachers some funds so they could go out and get instructional materials that they need. We purchased benches to make sure that young students have benches that where their feet can hit the ground. This is important. I learned a lot this year in terms of four-year-olds. And we're preparing, I think, well in advance, and we're in a good place in terms of facilities, services, and operations. As I mentioned earlier, we're going to transition to a full-day program, and we started last May, so it's been a little bit more than a year working with our early learning team. We also had representatives from our Teachers Association, as well as kindergarten teachers in the group. We met many times over the course of the year and talked about what does it look like to implement a full-day program. What are the needs that teachers and kids especially will have in order to do that? And so for TK next year, we'll have a staggered program, which means there'll be smaller groups of students for an hour in the morning and an additional hour in the afternoon. However, from a parent's perspective, they'll be able to drop their kids off at 8:25 and pick them up at 2:50, just like they do their first through sixth grade students. And we feel that that will be of great benefit to the families in our community. And so we will be providing care and instruction during that stagger time of an hour in the morning and an hour in the afternoon. Okay, and that is our brief update on Universal Pre-K, and I'd be happy to answer any questions you might have.
I'd like to go to the public to see if there's anyone from the public with a comment on this or question. Seeing no one, Ms. Dover, Drew?
Is there a name? Well, first of all, I want to compliment all the work that you put on this, and it's going to be very beneficial for those four-year-olds and their families. I wondered if you could supply the name of an instructional program that is being used for the instruction. Like
Guided Language Acquisition Design would be one, otherwise known as GLAAD. We also use our Bridges Mathematics program, which is our kindergarten through sixth grade program, and there are some materials that extend down into pre-kindergarten. The state has put out a comprehensive list of standards and activities and instructional focus areas that teachers can use. And then, as I mentioned, we have an expert group in our early learning team that works together to develop curriculum and, you know, activities that they're going to do within those classrooms over time.
Will you have outside consultants come in?
I don't believe that will be necessary. I think, you know, our current staff, along with we might use County Office of Education staff to help us out. They get some information from the state, bring it into us, and then, you know, disseminate it out. And they've been a great resource in this work. We meet periodically. I don't believe it's every month, but periodically to discuss as a whole group the transition to universal TK, because we're all doing it together.
Thank
you. Mr. Buckman.
Thank you very much. Congratulations. Just a few weeks away. I just have a couple of quick questions. On one of the slides, Rick, there's actually down below, there's a click and you can actually see the schedule. Would you be able to get there?
I think those were removed, Mr. Buck.
Oh, okay.
The schedules were sent out to sites and sent out to parents. They were shared with the board in Friday Focus, but they were removed from this particular presentation. But okay. The schedules are there for the families, and they are able to see what their day looks like.
On late start Mondays, there was an indication. So can the parents still on a late start Monday bring their kids at 8:25?
Absolutely.
Okay, that's one of those schedule questions. Mm-hmm. Is the class size ratio, is that set by state law, or is that something that we determine?
It is for TK, set by state law. 12-1 next year, 10-1 the following year.
Interesting. So that begs the question, because lower class size ratios are more expensive, where does the money come for us to meet those ratios?
Yeah. It is a great question. The state, and Mr. Pinkerton can do a much better job of explaining this than I can, but the state, because of our basic aid status, has not given us additional funds to implement universal TK. And so we're essentially adding an additional grade level to our schools over time. And by 25-26, we will have as many TK classes, perhaps more because of the class size limit, than we do kindergarten classes. So adding a full grade level is not a cheap proposition. We have talked to Senator Laird. I was with Dr. Prater on a visit to Baywood a couple months back, and we talked at length about the need for funding to make this program happen.
And I think this may go hand in hand. It's mandatory for kids to attend school 1 through 12, is my understanding.
6 years old is the legal mandatory age, so TK is technically not mandatory.
Right. So we've got other districts that get their funding based on average daily attendance, ADA.
Correct.
Is that the same for this with other districts?
It won't be for us because of our status.
But
it will be for other districts.
Oh, interesting. Yes. Okay. I think that does it for me. Thank you very much.
Ms. Frank?
Sure. Mayfield. Sorry about that. Thank you. You know what? One of the things that you said was, or pushing out, I think, a schedule to parents. I'm wondering, too, because this is new and parents are very curious about the day activities, play, and, you know, that incorporated. Will we be sending out, or I'm wondering if the district is looking at sending out information, you know, to all parents who are enrolled about, you know, that whole, what that, you know, comprehensive, you know, day looks like for their little ones, and so that they get this consistent, you know, district message.
Absolutely.
About what, so are we looking at doing, and maybe you've already done that. I don't know.
We have discussed that, and of course at back to school night, that is what TK teachers share. Like, this is what curriculum, instruction, and assessment looks like for a 4-year-old. And it's very different than a student in fifth grade taking the SBAC test and, you know, studying hard at mathematics. But for a four-year-old, it could be gross and fine motor, development of language, you know, a pre-literacy kind of awareness and standards that are there. So certainly that's a message that will be sent out from the very beginning. And I want to add that developmental appropriateness is not a function of time so much as it is activity.
Mm-hmm.
So the kids are with us a greater amount of time, right. But it really depends on what activities we're doing with those kids at that time.
Well, I know that, and I'm sure I'm speaking for a lot of my colleagues, is that, you know, going into our TK classrooms, we have experts that are really doing the work already, and so it's really kind of nice to be able to see that. I did have one quick question. I don't know if you can answer it or Mr. Block can answer it, but I just happened to read today in my CSBA bulletin about the California Commission on Teacher Credentialing having a new requirement for pre-K through third grade is a new credential. Is that going to slow down our hiring or? Okay.
They usually grandfather those things in as well. That new teachers coming up need to have those requirements, but that current teachers have X number of years to get any additional credential.
Okay. Thank you.
Ms. Roger?
Thank you. Just a quick comment here. I really applaud the institution of TK, full-day TK. I think that it is going to tremendously benefit our students, our LCAP-identified students, our children in poverty, right. Our English learners, our foster homeless youth, who oftentimes hit kindergarten with one hand tied behind their back. So I really applaud it, but I want to underscore your discussion with Mr. Buckman that for us it's an unfunded mandate that will be very costly. Mm-hmm. And so it's important for us to speak to our legislators, to continue to put the pressure on to find a way to fund this program in basic aid districts.
Agreed.
Just really quick, I wanted to commend Rick and Chelsea Smiley, who's also on this meeting. Chelsea did meet with all the TK teachers this week, spent a full day, just make sure they were all on the same page. Rick has been, when Rick says he has monthly meetings, these TK teachers take this so seriously. And going to full day, getting them on board to grapple this and to move forward has taken a Herculean effort. And Mr. Mayfield is to be commended along with Chelsea Smiley for their work and with the other teachers. I watched the teachers leave after working with Chelsea for the day. Smiles, happy, I think it was really nice, the extra effort that Rick and Chelsea put in to guide them and give them what they need and get them the materials and supplies. I think has made a huge difference in terms of getting this started for the fall.
Yeah, thanks, Mr. Pinkerton. I second that about Chelsea. She's done a tremendous job organizing, getting the materials that people need, understanding exactly what the needs are and making sure that we respond. I think our schedules show pretty much all the things that the teachers brought up are in there in terms of the staggered day, so they can intensify with those smaller groups of students and identify, as you mentioned, Mrs. Roger, students who might need extra support and help early on. So, yeah.
Thank you. The only thing I would add, I really appreciate pointing out, and it's very important, the unfunded mandate piece of this, and it comes not just with the personnel costs, but there are facilities costs, and we need little desks and little benches and different materials. The costs are pricey,
significant.
And the expectation as of today is that basic aid districts will simply absorb these costs, and it is not, it's a lot to ask of us. And all other students and staff will have to do some belt tightening unexpectedly on top of everything else, on top of all the other costs that we are continuing to incur as the state pulls, by an unfunded mandate, it's basically like pulling money away from us. And that on top of the increased STRS and PERS costs, it hurts us. It hurts our staff. It hurts our teachers. It hurts our kids. It's hard on our facilities that we can't, where we need to absorb this. One question I have is, do we have any idea of how many students will be in our first coming next year?
Those numbers, again, it's 24 students to two adults is the maximum, and we're pretty solid, except for about two schools. I want to say Del Mar is in the low teens,
okay.
13 perhaps I think we're up to, could even be 12. I haven't looked this week, but most of the rest of our classrooms are close to capacity,
okay.
And students trickle in at this point in time. Right. So, you know, we had another one today, and we filled up Los Ranchos. That was a 24th student, so...
Thank you. And Ms. Frame?
So what happens when, you know, a school is at this the size of the capacity, that let's say it's their home school, what happens to that student?
Yeah. TK, you know, we've tried to enroll all students into their home school when possible, but there have been a little bit of movement. There are some students that attend Pacheco, for example, in town. And those are current siblings or English learner students. And so perhaps their home school is a C.L. Smith or Hawthorne, but they're attending at Pacheco. But we'll find a spot for them. If we're full, for example, we are full at C.L. Smith, but we do have spots at Sinchheimer, and I believe there's still one left at Bishop's Peak. So parents can go to those schools. But then they'll return to their home school for the kindergarten year.
Ms. Dilberger.
Yeah, so in the spring, will the TK, the UTK be, or PK, be accessible the same way as Kindergarten Roundup is? And will they take place at the same time?
Yeah, so during open enrollment, students, parents rather, signed up for TK through the same process that they did through ARES and the same process that they did for kindergarten. They are participating in Kindergarten Roundup as well. Yeah.
Thanks.
Thank you. This is a discussion item at this time. No action necessary. So thank you very much. All right. Next is item 10.04, approve elimination of class ranking.
Okay. Hopefully you can see and hear from me.
We can. Thank you.
Awesome. Thank you. So I want to thank you as a board for giving me this opportunity to present again this evening. If you recall, we reviewed the concept of class ranking in our study session. I think it was in mid-May. And I'm bringing this forth tonight as a reminder. We're talking here about class ranking. As a board, we have board policy with regard to valedictorian and salutatorian, and about 10, 11 days ago, you had the opportunity to attend graduation ceremonies. What we're focused on this evening is the concept of class rank, and it's important to remember that we do not currently have board policy or admin regs that has the concept of class ranked denoted. We have a practice where we do rank our students currently in San Luis Coastal and have done for many years. But our feedback from our students and our feedback from our counseling team and our administrators and our teachers and even parents that we've talked about before, what is the impact of class ranking on our students? And there's a demonstrated amount of anxiety and stress that's caused by the ranking system. We see and hear from students where they are increasingly focused on the rank that they may receive rather than the learning. They will absolutely take courses that will boost their GPA, and they will deviate away from taking courses that will allow them to explore and engage, whether it be in career technical education or dual enrollment options or VAPA. And the concept of class rank defeats the purpose of our board's vision, where we are trying to encourage students to be courageous and creative thinkers and to be collaborative, because it creates an environment where it's constant, almost like competition. Compounding that, as you know, AB 104 was passed this past year, which impacted our students who are in the high school, 9th through 12th grade. Essentially, as a result of COVID, students had the opportunity, if they so fit, to ask for grades that were issued during 2021 to be changed to a pass or no pass. And we saw many, many students and many, many parents reaching out to take and make use of this opportunity. And we've concluded here unique student counts for your review. It's also important to remember that when we look at class ranking, we have the UC system and the CSU system not necessarily asking for a class ranking as part of their admissions process. And when we look at our neighboring school districts, several of our neighboring school districts do not rank their students. And many of the top student schools in the state of California do not rank their students. And so it's my hope this evening, representing our counseling team, our students, our site administrators, our district, to bring this forth so that we can formally eliminate the concept of class ranking, beginning with the class of 2024. We understand that we would grandfather in our current junior class as they head into the senior year. But when we take into consideration the stress that's caused through the ranking process, when we take into consideration AB 104 changes, when we think about the past 2 years, when we had hybrid learning, we had online learning, we had half-day classes, we had APEX, we had a variety of opportunities, we had virtual summers, and we're so blessed now that we're back in person in many aspects for summer. But in summation, it's our hope that we can formally eliminate the practice of class ranking, again, starting with the class of 2024. And I will take any questions that you may have.
Thank you. I'd like to go to the public on this topic. Anyone here for this? No, hearing none. We'll come back to the board. Any questions or comments? This is an action item. If there are no questions or comments, then if someone would like to make a motion on to approve the elimination of class ranking. I'll make a motion in support of item 10.04 to approve elimination of class ranking. Is there
a... I'll second.
Okay, I think Ms. Frame beat you to it, Ms. Roger.
Okay.
All right. Ms. Roger?
Yes.
Ms. Frame?
Yes.
Ms. Dobler-Drew?
Yes.
Mr. Buckman?
Yes.
And I'm a yes. Thank you.
All right.
Thank you. All right. Next is item 10.05, Expanded Learning Opportunities Program Update.
Okay, I have the pleasure of presenting our Expanded Learning Opportunities Program plan to you this evening, and just to give you a brief update on some of the elements of this. It's exciting that the state is providing funding to create up to a 9-hour day for students to be able to, and families to be able to receive support for extended learning opportunities. As you can see on this slide, that's before and after school, summer, and intersession learning experiences that are more robust than just simply child care. I think, you know, you can see that in our summer experience program this year that Mr. Martin presented earlier, you know, just tremendous opportunities for kids to be able to do coding and swimming and other things like that. And the intent of this bill, Senate Bill 129, and also AB 130, is to provide support for families to have that extended care, especially our working families. Okay, key components of the program are that we must offer extended learning opportunities to the unduplicated students. That would be English learner students, socioeconomically disadvantaged, homeless, foster youth. Those are known as unduplicated students enrolled in classrooms. They don't all have to attend, but we do need to offer it to those students. We need to provide at least 50% of that population access to expanded learning opportunities for the 22-23 school year. On school days, like during this 180 regular days of the school year, we offer in-person before and after school programs that are at least 9 hours in length. And currently, we work with our community partners to offer childcare from 7 o'clock until the start of school, and then from the end of school till about 6 p.m. That's pretty typical. So currently, there's about 11 hours of childcare provided, but this would be a beefed-up version of that. And then during summer, provide at least 30 days during intercession period. Summer would be considered an intercession period. So that's a requirement of extended learning opportunities. And as Mr. Martin mentioned earlier, certainly we're looking at some of these extended learning opportunity funds to go towards paying for some elements of summer school. Okay. We'll do, as I mentioned, after school and summer school enrichment programs for TK through sixth grade students. It will extend the school year by 30 days and provide before and after school child care to qualifying families, and also, they're going to help us with our stagger this year and our Friday after-school kinder and TK care as well. We've attached the Extended Learning Opportunities Program plan here. We met with the county and our county partners over the course of this year to discuss Extended Learning Opportunities Program. And the recommendations that we got from that group were to start small, keep it simple, and build the program over time. And that's certainly what we'll do. So this particular summer, we're not using extended learning opportunity grant funds for this summer program, but we will look to do that over next summer. And then we will start using these funds from the first day of school coming up this year.
And I'll add a few things onto Rick's presentation. That is, we're still waiting for the governor to pass the state budget. And with that will be the potential change in some of these requirements. So we're kind of waiting to kind of see what the final requirements will be. I think, like Rick said, summer program, really critical, key component. You have to have the numbers, which I think we're already seeing with kids signing up. And so what's nice about this program is if we get the unduplicated students to go, we can then offer it to all kids. So this is something that we actually can expand and grow. We'll have a couple of years of funds because we didn't spend this year's. Because it was really, kind of dicey how you used them, if you used them, how to do it, those types of things. So it's, as of now, if you offer it at one school, the before and after school care, you have to offer it at all schools. So, we're going to wait and see kind of where this lays out. My hope is to meet with Rick and the team, with Jeff, see how summer school can be tied in, and then we can hopefully then expand the program to a before and after school care for students throughout our school district. So really an exciting program, I think, for all kids and for families. Again, 9 hours of care right now. And we are super fortunate to have the city of Morro Bay, the city of San Luis Obispo, and the YMCA as just fantastic partners who are embracing this and really want to, assist us in making this 9 hour day help. And so, it's been a real positive conversation so far, I would say, leading into the TKK, because they're really going to assist us with that, and so that this parents have that option to have their kids there full day, and we look forward to expanding it.
And what the state's telling us at this time is these funds will be ongoing, and we'll see if that is indeed the case. But
and this is outside the LCFF, so we will receive these funds as the Basic Aid School District.
Thank you. I see first Mr. Buckman, followed by Ms. Dover-Drew, followed by Ms. Roger.
Okay. Thank you. Again, Rick, been a busy man. Congratulations. Was this a grant to begin with?
It's not a grant.
Okay.
You're given a certain amount of money allocated by the state.
When I looked at the plan, it looked like a grant application. So I'm just checking. All the partners that we have, all the kids, some of the mentorships, it sounds like, are they all trained? Are they going to be all fingerprinted? Are they currently fingerprinted?
They are currently fingerprinted, okay, certainly.
Okay. But some of the kids may be attending some after-school things like soccer. baseball, football.
Yep.
How does that, is it the parents' responsibility to get them there, and can they be excused from the program for like a Wednesday afternoon and come back on Thursday?
I certainly think that would be something we would work out. We'll have our own youth sports program beginning next year, and we'll integrate those two things absolutely, so that students would be able to participate in sports, you know, go into extended learning opportunities with our community partners, perhaps do other things as well. Big Brothers, Big Sisters is an example of a program that operates on campuses and other things like that. So,
thank you.
But, yeah, the actual wording is we just have to have the parents sign up. So we have to have at least half the unduplicated sign up. And then they can choose to go Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, you know, when they want. But that, and that's kind of why we're waiting for that final kind of budget bill to be passed to know exactly what the requirements are so we can set up the program accordingly.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Ms. Dobler-Drew.
So would this be an area where the iInnovate program can be used and CTE facilities to be engaging and hands-on?
Certainly. Absolutely. Yeah.
So that's it, the plan?
It is limited to TK sixth grade, so it wouldn't be.
Wouldn't be CTE unless they expand it later.
Correct. But okay. Absolutely. Hands-on learning, iInnovate would be
they'll
great,
go in the labs.
Would be a great example of.
We currently have a lot of fifth through eighth grade kids doing woodworking, drone, I mean, a ton of things right now in summer school. So I think the answer is yes. Definitely we can tie this in.
Thank you.
Ms. Prime.
When you were talking, Mr. Mayfield, I was wondering, you know, with all the great partnerships that we're having at, you know, Y and Morro Bay and Slo City, Mr. Buckman mentioned, you know, fingerprinting, but I was thinking more in terms of programmatic. Is the district going to have some kind of oversight or, you know, trying to look at, you know, continuity of programs across sites? And I mean, it's a hard thing because we're partnering, but what do you think that looks like?
Yeah, great question. It is also a little bit more challenging with three different organizations.
Yeah.
But I think we've had a great partnership with all three of those organizations and others throughout the years. And for our staggered day TK, for example, the staff for the cities and for YMCA will be working under our direction during the stagger. So we'll be giving them some training, you know, limited training, and working with them on activities that kids would do during that time, that type of thing. So I think we'll be working very closely with those organizations to make sure that the activities that the kids are doing during that time is challenging, rigorous,
engaging.
Yeah.
But are we purchasing materials for these organizations? Are they bringing them in? I mean, is that?
I think it's a little of both. I think, you know, they have access to some equipment that we have, certainly sports equipment, things like that, but we can be purchasing materials as well.
And the last thing I had, and I don't know, you know, this is ongoing, you know, funding, which is great. And like you mentioned, Mr. Pinkerton, the details aren't to be worked out. Are they tying in some kind of accountability piece and perhaps that accountability piece is just, you know, the unduplicated students, the number of that are, you know, participating? Is that kind of what we're looking at?
I think the state has indicated that that will be the case, that they'll be, you know, looking to see what the numbers are, and we'll be tracking all that, of course, to ensure that we have the requisite numbers and we're in compliance.
Yeah, this will be an audited issue. So we will have to ensure that we meet those guidelines to receive the funds and not have audit findings.
So I'll put in a little plug here. And I know this is wishful thinking on my part, but as we consider the sports and the other opportunities and the continuation of things that we have, we also have things in our community like a creative arts project that is going to be involved in summer programs and maybe carrying some of that over. We have the youth symphony. I don't know that we could create any sorts of partnerships with them that take place on our campuses. We have the little theater has some programs for children, so I'm going to put in my my plug for the arts here, and hopefully see some. I know we're making a really strong push for sports, but to add some other things in that regard, as well as funding, grants, volunteers, talent, interest, as all those things emerge, that I hope we pay close attention to those interests as well.
We just need to be careful of making too much extra work for everybody.
One of the nice things potentially with this for the board to know too is I'm hopeful that this might be a great opportunity for some of our classified folks to become full-time employees because of this program with the before and after school. So as we're trying to recruit and keep people employed, this might be a really nice a nice way for us to, again, have those employees have a full day. So, yep.
Whatever. All right. And again, thank you to the partnerships we're developing. That's really wonderful. And I'm looking forward to long and fruitful partnerships and more.
And this is an action item, Mrs. Sheffer, to vote on the Extended Learning Opportunities Program.
I have it
plan.
As an action item. I do. On one page and not on the other. Okay, so this is 10.05. All right, so I'm going to put that in here. All right, so this is approval of the Expanded Learning Opportunities Program. So I would take a motion in a second, please.
I'll move approval, please.
Okay, so we have a motion by Mr. Buckman and a second by Ms. Dobler-Drew. Andy, if you can read this when we're done, you get an even bigger star. Okay. Hold on one moment, please. Okay. Mr. Buckman.
Yes.
Ms. Dobler-Drew.
Yes.
Ms. Frame.
Yes.
Ms. Roger.
Yes.
And I'm a yes as well. Okay. Got that. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for keeping me straight here. All right. Next, we have a whole bunch of approvals and of various tentative agreements. So, Mr. Block, you have been patiently waiting, and now it's your time to shine.
Good evening. Thank you. We are so fortunate to have great labor relations with our group. In all of our groups, we've agreed to three-year agreements. As you recall, with updates throughout this year, we wrapped up negotiations a couple months ago, but now the final TAs are ready for your approval. We started off with the first group we settled with was SEIU. As those groups settled, they got the agreement that we did with SLCTA, which was a 4-3-3 over 3 years. All of the tentative agreements that I bring to you tonight have that in common, the 4-3-3. There are differences among them based on the interests of those bargaining groups. Again, these bargaining groups were great. I want to thank the union leadership, the bargaining teams, our side. A lot of time and effort went into these agreements. So pursuant to Government Code Section 3547.5, AB 1200, Statutes of 1991, Chapter 1213, and AB 2756, local educational agencies are required to disclose publicly the major provisions of all collective bargaining agreements before entering into a final written agreement. After a financial impact review of the public disclosures submitted regarding the tentative agreements between San Luis Coastal Unified School District, SLCTA, CSEA, and SEIU, the San Luis Obispo County Office of Education found that, based on the data submitted, they agree that the terms of the agreement would allow the district to meet its financial obligations in the current fiscal year and the two subsequent fiscal years. So I'm doing this for all the agreements here at once. And again, the TAs for all of these are attached to tonight's agenda. So now I'm going to go to the first agenda item here.
So Dan, before you start, if I could just interject again, we are, you know, I've been in my position for 9 years now. And I think this is our fourth 3-year agreement with our union groups. And it's almost just become something that we've expected and worked towards together. And again, that is, to me, really shows the dedication of our school board, our labor groups to work together to come to these agreements. There is not one district in our county that I don't think is, during those same time period, has had more than a 1-year agreement. I just wanted to say that out loud, that the fact that we have this, again, because we want to meet our staff, all of our staff, right, do whatever we can. The board has been super, when it comes to working conditions, salary, just focused on doing what we can for our employees. And tonight is just kind of that. The fact that we were able to get 3-year agreements with all of them really is to be commended, I think, on both sides. So I just wanted to share that. Thank you.
Absolutely. So the first one I have in front of you is 10.06, the approval of the tentative agreement with CSEA.
Anyone from the public wishing to address us on this item? None. Ms. Roger?
I'll move approval.
Mr. Buckman?
Yeah, this was a great group to work with, and I would like to second that.
All right. We have a motion by Ms. Roger. Name is on, and a second by Mr. Buckman. And here we go. Ms. Frame?
Yes.
Ms. Dobler-Drew?
Yes.
Mr. Buckman?
Yes.
Ms. Roger?
Yes.
And I'm a yes. Thank you.
Yeah, and thank you to Mr. Buckman for participating with the CSEA, and then Ms. Roger for participating in SEIU. And next up, we have 10.07, approval of tentative agreement with SEIU.
I'll move approval.
Is there anyone from the public who'd like to speak on this one? We have a motion and...
I'll second again.
And a second by Mr. Buckman. Ms. Dobler-Drew?
Yes.
Ms. Frame?
Yes.
Ms. Roger?
Yes.
Mr. Buckman?
Yes.
I'm a yes. All right. 10.08 is SLCTA.
So next up is the tentative agreement for SLCTA, correct?
Okay, thank you. Just not sure if you want to throw anything in there.
No, it's good. I
want to
give
you the opportunity.
Thank you, yes.
We don't see you too much. Okay, do anyone from the public wishing to address us on this item? All right, any board comments, questions, and a motion? Ms. Frame, would you like to move on this?
I was just going to say, so moved.
All right, and a second?
I'll second.
Ms. Frame?
Yes.
Ms. Roger?
Yes.
Mr. Buckman?
Yes.
Ms. Dobler-Drew?
Yes.
I mean, yes. Now we move on to 10.09, which is the management employee group.
This is our MEC group. Again, the MeToo 433 is the same as the other agreements.
And anyone from the public wishing to address us on this one? No. All right. Back to the board. Mr. Buckman?
Yes, I'd like to make a motion to approve, having formerly been a member of a management employee group.
I'll second it.
Second by Ms. Dobler-Drew. All right, Mr. Buckman?
Yes.
Ms. Dobler-Drew?
Yes.
Ms. Frame?
Yes.
Ms. Roger?
Yes.
I'm a yes. All right. And next is our confidential group. Same thing.
Same thing, yeah.
I'm not used to having no one say anything. All right, anyone from the public? No. All right. I'll make a motion on this one just to, keep things moving along here. And a second? Anyone?
I'll second.
Okay, Mr. Buckman. All right. Mr. Buckman?
Yes.
Ms. Dobler-Drew?
Yes.
Ms. Frame?
Yes.
Ms. Roger?
Yes.
I'm a yes. Mandy, are you getting all this? Okay. And next, it has to do with, so we've done this 10.10, 10.11, salary addendum for superintendent and assistant suits.
This is the me too. Theirs is, just includes the salary and the insurance. That's the two parts of the agreement for the assistant suits and superintendent.
Thank you. And just for the public, you know, we don't just automatically do this. The board has an opportunity to review each of these agreements, and it has been what we've done in the past is to do the Me Too, but we discuss it almost every 3 years about how we want to do things. We have robust discussions with our bargaining units and great participation by trustees who work with them. So just want to make sure everyone's aware of that. So this is for the superintendent and assistant superintendents, and we need a motion.
I'll make the motion.
Thank you. In a second. I'll second. Get quicker on the draw there, Evelyn. All right, Mr. Buckman.
Yes.
Ms. Dobler-Drew.
Yes.
Ms. Frank. Yes. Ms. Roger.
Yes.
And I'm a yes. Okay, next is a salary schedule for unrepresented employees.
So again, this one isn't a tentative agreement, so a little different here. Unrepresented employees, as we raise the wage a little bit, this includes our substitutes on the attachment. There's a few classes that change there and highlighted. This is substitutes and hourly employees.
Thank you. Anyone from the public in this? No one? Anyone like to make a motion? Turn your light on, Evelyn. Gotta get quicker.
So moved.
You keep reaching, but not fast enough. All right, and a second?
I'll second.
Okay, Ms. Frame?
Yes.
Mr. Buckman?
Yes.
Ms. Dobler-Drew?
Yes.
Ms. Roger?
Yes.
And I'm a yes. Okay, next is the salary schedule for our summer school, and yes, why?
Yeah, attached there is a list of some of the positions. As Mr. Martin explained earlier tonight, we had an agreement that teachers got their normal hourly wage. Teachers outside the district got our established hourly wage. But there were a lot of unique circumstances, like classified people that are teaching classes. So we had a lot of discussion, Mr. Pinkerton, Mrs. Frost, myself, Mr. Martin in the HR department, to come up with these that we thought were fair and attractive to be able to fill these positions so that we could provide the opportunities that Mr. Martin explained earlier tonight.
Thank you. Ms. Dobler-Drew, did you have I see your light on. I just want to, no, that's all right. You can leave it on. I just wanted to make sure
thank you.
Trying to pay attention here. Anyone from the public on this one? No. All right. So a motion on 10.13.
I'll make it.
Okay, thank you.
I make a motion to approve the salary schedule for summer. I'm sorry, for.
Yeah, we got it. 10.13. Summer school and ESY.
And ESY.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Second?
Second.
Thank you. Ms. Dobler-Drew?
Yes.
Oops. Ms. Frame?
Yes.
Mr. Buckman? Ms. Roger?
Yes.
And I'm a yes. Really doing a good, I want Ms. Roger to note that I'm doing a very good job of calling everyone by their last names this late into the meeting.
Yes.
I usually fall down on the job around now. Okay. Next is 10.14, authorize approval of intent to apply for provisional internship permit.
Yeah. So the next two, the first one is a special education teacher that is a qualified teacher, comes recommended from Mrs. Gould that she continue in this. She's met the requirements for her class. She just needs a little bit more time to pass a certification test. So she's done the job. She's competent. We feel confident in her ability to continue in her role.
And she will take the test.
She will take the test again. Okay.
Thank you. Anyone from the public? Okay. Motion on 10.14. Greatly appreciated.
I'll move.
Thank you. Second. Thank you. Mr. Buckman.
Yes.
Ms. Dobler-Drew.
Yes.
Ms. Frank.
Yes.
Ms. Roger.
Yes.
I'm a yes. 10.15, authorize approval of intent to apply for provisional internship permit. Oh, another.
Right. This is a current teacher in a program that would require a BCLAD. Again, qualified bilingual teacher just needs more time to pass that test. According to Mr. Mayfield, great teacher, strong candidate. Just we need one more opportunity to get this test passed.
It can be challenging. All right. So we need a motion on 10.15, please. Anyone from the public? Thank you.
I'll make the motion on 10.15.
Thank you. And a second?
I'll second.
Ms. Roger?
Yes.
Mr. Buckman?
Yes.
Ms. Dobler-Drew?
Yes.
Ms. Frame?
Yes.
I'm a yes. Approval, 10.16, approval of annual declaration of need for fully qualified educators.
So the attached document lists numbers, different classifications. At this time, we may not need any of them. But the way it works, unless we have this declaration ahead of time, we can't apply for them later. So that's the way this works. An example of this might be somebody with CLAD. Even though all of our initial candidates now come with that CLAD certificate, if it was an older teacher returning to the workforce or a teacher coming from another state, they may not have that certificate. They've been teaching 20 years. They'd be a great fit in the program. This would allow us to give them a year to get that certificate. Same as earlier with BCLAD. And then for secondary, it could be a fully credentialed teacher. All of these are fully credentialed teachers. They're just needing this add-on or the certificate. Is that they're biology teacher and we need one section of another subject. They're a competent teacher. And again, we don't have any knowledge of this yet, but they teach outside of their credentialed subject area.
Thank you. Ms. Frank.
Mr. Block, just a quick question.
Yep.
Is this, given the teaching shortage across the states and in California, is this, at one point years ago, they were approving, emergency credentialed teachers who had not, I don't remember the certification, but are they anticipating that we might use this for somebody maybe who has, completed their, student teaching, but they haven't fully, they may not have any years of experience. Yeah.
We do have interns that we can hire. We always want to look first that gives us most solid ground is somebody that has a credential. Special education, as I've come to you before, is an area we have need. And so there might be areas where they're hard to fill positions where we'd have to look at people on exemptions for those areas.
But then my other question is that given that this, we don't know, could be a potential, do we have procedures in place for extra support for that particular incident?
Good question. Not knowing exactly where that would be, but co-teachers or, intern working with Cal Poly doesn't have these current programs, but it could be from another university. Again, we are fortunate. Our employees, the numbers we have with having right now needing zero, I think across the state of California, some districts have a large number of employees on these sort of agreements.
Ms. Roger.
Yeah, I think you may have just answered my question, Mr. Block. I was trying to fly off my memory, which it's a little late. My memory's dimming. But I thought I recalled that our interns came from U of Mass or something.
Correct.
As opposed to Cal Poly, and I wondered why we weren't seeking local interns.
Cal Poly doesn't offer that internship program.
Yeah. Thank you.
Do you have anything else, Ms. Frame? I cut you off. Okay, sorry. All right. Any other questions? Then we need a motion on item 10.16, please.
I'll move approval of 10.16.
Thank you. And a second?
I'll second.
I'll second.
Thank you. Ms. Dober-Drew?
Yes.
Ms. Frame?
Yes.
Ms. Roger?
Yes.
Mr. Buckman?
Yes.
I'm a yes. You may be seated. Thank you. Thank you so much. All right. We are moving on to the action consent agenda. Please let me know if you'd like anything pulled. 11.01, Agricultural Career Technical Education Incentive Grants for Morro Bay and San Luis Obispo High Schools. Approval of certificated and classified personnel items. 11.03, Community Advisory Committee appointments. 11.04, Disposal of surplus. 11.05, Acceptance of donations. 11.06, Approval of furniture and equipment requests. 11.07, Approval of minutes from May 31, 2022. 11.08, Approval of minutes from June 6, 2022. 11.09, Approval of purchase orders and Cal card purchases.
Pull. Please.
11.10, Authorization for records destruction. 11.11, Authorizing continued use of remote teleconferencing provisions pursuant to AB 361 and Government Code 54953. 11.12, Approve quarterly report on uniform complaint filings, Williams settlement. And 11.13, Approval of warrants and payroll. Is there anyone from the public wishing to address any of those? All right, then I would appreciate a motion. Thank you.
I'll move approval of items 11.01 through 11.13, exclusive of 11.09.
That was well done.
That was nice.
I'll second.
Mr. Buckman.
Yes, on 11 points.
Oh, wait. We're voting on.
I'm
just,
sorry.
Yes. Thank you. Get with the program here. Ms. Dober-Drew.
She's left.
She's left for the evening.
Oh, she left.
She has family.
Oh, we're going to have a quorum here. Ms. Frame.
Yes.
Ms. Roger.
Yes.
I'm a yes. Okay, the incredible shrinking board. Okay, Mr. Buckman, you pulled 11.09.
Yeah, Ryan, I have just one question, and I understand I didn't get to ask this earlier, but if we go to the board report in 11.09, have you guys taken a bet on which one I'm going to ask? No, okay. Let me see. Line item 222558, City of Morro Bay, for consulting services, we paid them $127,000. I just wondered if sometime in the future you could let me know what consulting services.
It's the police officer, the SRO officer.
Oh, okay. Well, that's good consulting.
Yeah.
Yeah, good. Good job by them.
So we still do, when we do something like a contract with a city or even childcare, those types of things, we still make them go through a consulting process. So they have to prove fingerprinting and insurance responsibilities, all those types of things are part of that consulting agreement.
Yep. Good thing that the police officer passed the fingerprint. Yep. I'd like to move approval of 11.09.
I'll second. All right, Mr. Buckman. Ms. Frame?
Yes.
Ms. Roger?
Yes.
And I'm a yes. Okay. Any advanced agenda items? Any board reports?
Just,
Buckman.
out of the many things that I did want to mention the Pacific Beach Career Fair that Mr. Baldwin mentioned. I thought it was excellent, but I have to tell you, I talked to the old Navy representative, and I asked, what would be a benefit of working at Old Navy? And I almost fell over when the gentleman told me, you get 50% off on anything you buy at Old Navy, Gap, and three or four other stores. So I thought just before Christmas, I might get a part-time job. Thank you.
I would just add that when I spoke with the representative from Old Navy, he graduated from a continuation high school. So he was particularly interested in working with those, with the Pacific Beach students. And I really appreciated that. Yeah, the job fair was great, as were the graduations. Anyone else? Ms. Rogers.
No, that's it. Now I got to throw this in. When I spoke to the representative from food services at Cal Poly, they were very accommodating to students and working around school schedules and part-time employment, and apparently a very decent wage scale.
Anyone else? Then we adjourn this meeting. Thank you very much.